and welcome to Deep North. My name is Eric Pomeranke, and I'm here today in the studio with Iceland Review staff writer Ragnar Tómas. Today we are going to be taking a look at his piece, Melting Hearts. Are the Ice Guys a boy band, a gimmick, or both?
Long in the tooth. Jón Jónsson had the idea for Ice Guys in early 2023. It all began as a kind of a joke. He was, after all, 38 years old, and probably a bit too long in the tooth to start a boy band. But despite his advanced age, in boy band years that is, he still had his boyish good looks, and those teeth, no matter how long, would become the focal point of a Colgate Christmas campaign later that year. Besides, Jón had a slew of popular singles to his name and years of experience in the Icelandic music business. So why not? Jón dialed the bat phone to his brother, pop star Friðrik Þór, rappers Herran Hetusmjör and Aron Khan, and Iceland's most handsome man, Rúrik Gíslason. If you are unfamiliar with Rúrik Gíslason, Sexy Rú as he was playfully called during my time trailing the gang, a brief digression is in order. The Hot One. In the summer of 2018, when Iceland was swept up into a mania of football-colored patriotism, then-footballer Rúrik Gíslason came on as a substitute during Iceland's first-ever World Cup match against Argentina. With 30 minutes left of the game, Rúrik sprinted onto the pitch with silky blonde hair gathered into a neat bun, landscape stubble affording a smooth fella some rough texture, and uncanny valley peepers seemingly designed by machine learning algorithms to bankrupt the concept of celibacy. It may have been the most successful substitution in the history of Icelandic football. Iceland secured a tie against Argentina, one of the tournament's top contenders, and Rúrik secured ties with legions of Argentina's female viewership. By the time the ref had blown the final whistle, the eager fingers of a quarter million South American women had smashed follow on Instagram. Qué lindo. Rúrik would hit a million followers soon thereafter, and in a press conference during the tournament, goalkeeper Hannes Þór Halldórsson, who famously saved a penalty for Messi during the opening match, was asked to comment on Rurik's newfound glory. "He's finally getting the attention he deserves," Hannes remarked. The press cracked up. Big ideas. During their first meeting in early 2023, Jón asked Rúrik, who had begun releasing music in 2021, and the rest of the gang if they would like to start a boy band and maybe release a summer single. The proverbial ball began rolling quickly. During their second meeting, which coincided with reports that the Backstreet Boys would perform in Iceland that April, someone pitched an idea for an Ice Guys TV show. And a few days later, Jón found himself sitting across from TV execs with, quote, "no script, just vibes." And whatever Jón was selling, Sjómarp Simons was buying. Deal done. Rúletta. The Ice Guys released their first single, Rúletta, Roulette in English, in collaboration with hitmaker Þormóður Eiríksson in June of that year. A month later, having recruited super producer Ásgeir Orri Ásgeirsson, they released their second single, Krumla. Krumla is the Icelandic word for the game of mercy, in which two people interlock fingers and attempt to bend back the wrists of their opponents. A video to the song, which opens with Rúrik Gíslason playing a metaphorically amorous game of mercy with one of Iceland's top models, was also released. The video, directed by Allan Sigurðsson and Hannes Þór Arason, was produced by the aforementioned messy penalty-saving former goalkeeper Hannes Þór Halldórsson. He had founded his own production company that summer. In Iceland, every professional athlete needs a sideline. Krumla featured the five attractive Ice Guys engaged in a Homerian bromance while dancing admirably in sync and admirably in denim at various locales around the capital of Iceland, including the Reykjavik airport. And the ball just kept rolling. While vacationing in Italy with his brother in July, Yon pitched the idea of hosting a Christmas concert at Kaplakriki, a sports arena in Hafnarfjörður. Far-fetched. The idea for the concert was somewhat far-fetched, Yon admitted, sitting across from me at the Saludin Concert Hall in Kópavogur, where the Ice Guys were rehearsing a few days before their big night. Given that we had only released two songs in all, Yon recalled. The Ice Guys went on to perform those two songs at the National Festival in the Westman Islands, arguably the biggest stage in Icelandic popular music, in August. They weren't booked for the event, but snuck on stage as a cameo during Hera Hnetusmjör's set. Parts of the TV show were filmed during their performance. While some were initially skeptical of this supergroup coming together under the pretense of a boy band, the TV show, released in October, seemed to clarify the concept to its detractors. Playing up some of the salient qualities of the five men and inventing others, the audience was made to understand that all of this was very much tongue-in-cheek. Although, as would later become evident, their wink-and-a-nod attitude was belied by the ambitiousness of their musical production and dance routines. Ice Guys, the TV show. In the semi-fictional TV show, it's Fredrik Dohr and not Yon who has the idea for founding Ice Guys on account of having grown so emotionally drained by performing show after show as a soloist. Yon Yonsson agrees to the idea and spends much of the first season trying to escape the cold shadow cast by his more popular younger brother. Even their mother unfairly dotes on Fredrik Dohr, and wherever Yon goes, Fredrik's music is being played. Aron Khan, the baby of the group, plays a compulsive liar. Hera Hnetusmjör sinks deeper and deeper into debt, trying to keep up with a lavish lifestyle associated with famous rappers. And Rúrik Gíslason portrays a vain narcissist, incessantly shadowed by a German film crew. Ice Guys, the TV show, received rave reviews, and ticket sales for the concert picked up. Swiftian. The band had originally planned on hosting a family concert in Kaplakriki in the afternoon, and a longer version of the show, geared towards a more adult audience during the evening. But now, in light of rising demand, the Ice Guys decided to add a second family concert for good measure. It sold out in the space of 12 hours. To the outside eye, it seemed almost Swiftian, both in the sense of a satirical Jonathan of yore and the more modern and more seismic Taylor of now. The band released a Christmas EP in November, which featured a few original tracks and a handful of covers. Ever since, my two sons, aged 3 and 5, have sporadically broken into song and mangled the Ice Guys' lyrics in an especially endearing way. Connections. The Saludin Concert Hall in Kópavogur seemed an unusually grand venue for a rehearsal space. Yon admitted as much. We had been rehearsing in World Class, an Icelandic gym franchise, but we needed some place where we could synchronize the music to our dance steps. And our boy here, he gestured towards Hera Hnetusmjör, was quick to pull some strings. Hera Hnetusmjör, or Mr. Peanut Butter in English, had, in the space of about 6 or 7 years, crossed over from one of the island's most technically gifted and popular rappers to a fixture of mainstream pop culture. He was currently serving as a judge on the Idol singing competition and had gained an admirable social network. He fished out his phone and within a minute he had done it, Yon explained. He called some insider from Saludin and also some buddy of his on the municipal council. Yon laughed. The Bad Boy. Every good boy band is predicated on a carefully orchestrated group dynamic constructed around precise stereotypes. If Rúrik is the hot one and Yon is the responsible older brother, Hera Hnetusmjör is a designated bad boy. He dresses in fashionable clothes, wears sunglasses inside, and maintains a stolid poker face when interacting with others, as if to suggest that while he is generally courteous and pleasant to be around, That b-boy attitude is always lurking around the corner. Later that day at Saladin, one of the management took down the Ice Guy's respective email addresses, and when it was Netushmir's turn to provide his, he replied something@copeboys.com. "How do you spell that?" the individual inquired, a bit confused, and a helpful head of Netushmir lifted up his shirt to reveal the words in tattoo form on his belly, a reference to his hometown of Kopavur. New Kids on the Block. It's hard to put one's finger on the first boy band in music history. Some have pointed to the revival of barbershop quartets of the early 20th century, while others have suggested the Beatles. There is, however, a much more solid argument to be made that what we in the modern age understand by the concept of boy band traces its roots to New Kids on the Block. In 1982, musician, songwriter, and record producer Maurice Starr discovered New Edition at a talent contest. He went on to co-write and co-produce their debut album, Candy Girl. In spite of the success of the album and the subsequent tour, Starr reportedly only paid members of New Edition $2 apiece, which led to the group firing Starr in 1983 and suing for embezzlement. Starr went on to found New Kids on the Block, a kind of white version of New Edition. Indeed, several prominent boy bands throughout history have faced legal and financial challenges with their management. The Puerto Rican outfit Menudo reportedly endured underpayment and harsh working conditions, and both NSYNC and the Backstreet Boys had legal battles with their manager Lou Pearlman, accusing him of misrepresentation, fraud, and failure to pay adequate earnings. If one were to distill the essential elements of the modern boy band, it might go something like this. A group of young and handsome men, all of whom can sing and dance, are recruited by an outsider for the somewhat Machiavellian purpose of gaining popularity, especially among a young and female audience. Unlike many American boy bands, whose relationship with their management has often been fraught with exploitation and legal disputes, the Ice Guys seem very much in control of their own destiny. Whatever the true origins of the genre, Ice Guys is undoubtedly the first band in Iceland that hews to the true essence of boy bands, dance moves. Of Horses and Choreography. Stella Rosenkrantz had hardly learned to walk when she began to dance. As one of Iceland's most experienced choreographers, she has worked with almost everyone, ranging from Of Monsters and Men to Emsi Goethe and Páll Óskar. Stella knew Jón Jónsson from her time at Vestlunarskólinn Junior College, which was also where she met producer Ásgeir Orri. When Jón first approached her with the idea of choreographing the video to Krumla, she said yes immediately. A longtime fan of boy band culture, Stella found that reviewing any old videos from NSYNC or the Backstreet Boys was unnecessary. She had a pretty good idea of what she wanted to do. The only question was how capable the Ice Guys would be in executing her moves. The boys don't have any background in dancing, so how do you choreograph them in a way that they don't simply throw their hands in the air? She explained. She knew she had to give them plenty of footwork to make sure they were always moving, but not so much as to detract from the vocal performances. And so she did what she always does. She took the music for Krumla to the Heidmörk Conservation Area and began to walk. She prefers to stay away from places filled with cars or pedestrians. "I want to be in places where if I meet someone, that someone is a horse." She is not always successful. "Occasionally someone will pass and write me off as a lunatic," Stella told me. The steps for Krumla came relatively quickly. "But I had to slightly revise them in the studio," Stella continued. "As I compose while walking, there is always this forward motion, and so I had to adjust the steps so that the boys weren't moving 20 meters forward on the stage." Having settled on a basic framework, she took her ideas to the Ice Guys and gauged their abilities and reaction. "We just hit it off at once," Stella told me. "I began adding more complicated moves, and they proved equal to the task. I realized that I could really challenge them, which was exciting for me. Sound check. It was just before noon on December 16th, and the Kaplakriki Sports Stadium was tottering towards excitation. In an hour and a half, the uncrowded hallways would be congested with stirring children and their parents, and as the day slowly turned to night, and one performance followed the next, Yon Yonsun would appear to transcend to the veritable culmination of his earthly existence. Even when there is nothing doing, he's all energy, but this morning the occasion seemed to finally measure up to his enthusiasm. Bouncing on stage during soundcheck, Yon was belting out the lyrics to Stinkyatheni Stainin when the playback was suddenly cut off. Without missing a beat, Yon promptly reframed the technical mishap in a positive light, almost in the vein of Norman Vincent Peale. "It's okay, that's why we're practicing," he declared as he frolicked on the stage. And then in a sort of upbeat non sequitur, he yelled, "Awesome!" Meanwhile, Stella, whom Yon credited for the ambitiousness of the Ice Guy shows, was amicably barking instructions through her wireless mic. Once the playback came back on, the band continued to rehearse. Yon stepped down from the stage and reached over the partition, pretending to slap hands with the crowd, which had yet to arrive. Judging by his enthusiasm, however, there might as well have been a crush of fans screaming below on the empty dance floor. He later explained that this trance-like gusto was a part of his process of visualization, a technique that once carried him through an entire marathon for which he had not adequately trained. His brother, Friedrich Dode, was less obviously excited. Like a young Frank Sinatra, face eternally paralyzed by cool, Friedrich was visibly drained trying to balance the demands of choreography with the requirements of vocal performance. When he descended the stage following the sound check, he was notably flustered. "This is going to kill me," he remarked. Zeitgeist. Among the people looking on as the Ice Guys completed their final sound check was Ausgeir Orre, a seasoned producer who has worked with many of Iceland's most popular artists, ranging from Friedrich Dór, Páll Óskar, Herran Hettusmjör, Steinte Jr., and Briet. Ausgeir, like Stella Rosenkrantz, did not take much convincing to collaborate with the Ice Guys. He was partly inspired by the Swedish super-producer Max Martin, who has been responsible for many of the era's major pop hits. The Backstreet Boys' I Want It That Way, NSYNC's It's Gonna Be Me, and Britney Spears' Hit Me Baby One More Time, to name a few. "I've tried to use modern drum samples in conjunctions with the snares, hits, and claps that are ubiquitous in some of the classic boy band songs," Ausgeir explained. "And then all of it is driven home by these big, catchy Europop melodies." What Ausgeir enjoyed about the project was how it seemed to gel with the current zeitgeist of fun and joy. He also believes that music benefits from being tied to cultural phenomena. "A lot of what has been popular lately are songs that are tied to these larger gimmicks or cultural events," Ausgeir told me. "Like the Barbie movie, for example. It's really hard for a song to set itself apart if it isn't tied to some larger occasion." Once the soundcheck finished, Ausgeir decided to gun it back to the studio and re-export the tracks to accommodate some of the breathless dancing. Higher backing vocals in some places, a little lower in others. Reservations. Despite the number of elements that required coordination, the Ice Guys' first family concert went off without a hitch. During the first half of the show, the members of the group jumped onto the stage and performed songs from their own private catalogs prior to launching into the Ice Guys' more impressive and more ambitious choreographed routine. The children were visibly enthused by the performance, although I, sitting on the bleachers with my family, wondered if the group would have been better served jumping right into the latter half of the show. Whatever reservations I had harbored prior to the evening performance, however, were dispelled once the Ice Guys launched into their final full-length show. It kept to the same format, with individual members of the group taking the stage one at a time or in pairs. But this time, there was a live band on stage, more individual performances, and a few notable cameos. When Birnir joined Harald Hedersmjör on stage for Jau Jeg Veit, an old-school hip-hop banger featuring a stuttering, in-your-face synthetic bass line, the crowd went wild. Seeing Hedersmjör change into a white suit later in the performance, so as to croon a Christmas song with the Ice Guys while seated, was likewise unique. A TV weatherman from Fox News and a diehard fan of Jon Jonsson was reportedly among the crowd that evening. The decibel levels following the Ice Guys' performance of Krumla were deafening. My ears would ring for the better part of the night. A return to youth. Jon Jonsson would later confess that he had never experienced anything like it. "I'm the kind of person who can usually fall asleep immediately after a show," Jon recalled. "But I was so buzzed after our performance that I stayed up most of the night, scrolling through videos on social media and thinking to myself, did that just happen?" When Jon stumbled to his feet in the morning, he felt as if he had run 3 consecutive marathons. "Fortunately, my family was on their way to the public pool and I tagged along," Jon continued. "I shuffled between the steam room and the cold tubs in an attempt to recover. On the night before, it was as if he had returned to his early 20s. Many of his wife's friends felt the same way, which seemed somehow appropriate."
Well, thank you for sharing the piece, Ragnar.
You're very welcome.
So, you know, as we introduce the piece, now I have to ask you, are the Ice Guys a boy band, a gimmick, or both?
Yeah, fair question. I think it's important to begin at the beginning to answer this question. I think when they first sort of released their, when they released their debut single and when the first video came out to Krumla, I believe, I think a lot of people didn't quite know what to do with the Ice Guys. And that question was probably at the forefront of everyone's mind. Is this some kind of gimmick? Are they serious? You know, the line seemed very much blurred. And the great thing about the band was that they released this TV show, which really drove home the concept for a lot of people who had liked maybe the music and a lot of people who were skeptical of it. Because then you realize that, yes, this is, you know, all done very much tongue in cheek. But then at the same time, they're really ambitious about both the choreography and the production as well. Oskar Ore, who's produces for them, is really sort of dug deep into boy band culture, inspired by Max Martin and others, to craft, you know, a convincing and persuasive soundscape for this kind of music. And I'm firmly of the opinion that you should judge music on its own merits. And, you know, it's not wise going into something like the Ice Guys, comparing it to Leonard Cohen or Tom Waits or someone like that.
Well, and it's worth noting for anybody out of the loop that the TV show has also kind of gotten a certain reception abroad, right?
I'm not sure about abroad, actually. But
well, so my understanding is that is kind of shockingly popular in Germany.
Really? That may be that may have something to do with Rurik Gislason, who is, I gather, something of a celebrity over in Germany. So yeah, it's not surprising. But yeah, I mean, I remember when the TV show was released, I had no idea what to make of it. I hadn't seen it. And our former colleague, Rainer at the office, who I think, you know, leans skeptical towards a lot of things, said that, you know, he was like, oh, it was absolutely hilarious. I was laughing aloud the whole time. And then I, of course, watched it and found it equally entertaining. So yeah, I think they really benefited from the TV show. And as Oskar Ore, the producer, mentioned in the article, that, you know, a lot of some of, you know, the most popular music these days is like, in order to cut through all the noise, you really have to, you know, make something of a spectacle of the music. You need to tie it into cultural events, you know, like the music from Barbie, for example, Taylor Swift, releasing, you know, a feature film from one of her concerts. I mean, this is what you need to do in pop music today to gain attention.
Yeah. On that note, you briefly mentioned the zeitgeist, to use that word. And, you know, I mean, I can't help but try to like kind of connect some things here. Like, I don't have some big overarching theory as to why, but, you know, I mean, I can't help but notice that like last year, I believe it was the Backstreet Boys that came to Iceland, you know, like there's the Barbie movie. It does kind of just seem like there's some sort of moment happening where there's this kind of rediscovered interest in a certain kind of like, you know, 90s, early 2000s pop aesthetic. You know, where do you kind of see that interest coming from? Like, is it just nostalgia, a certain sense of the retro? This is just what the latest retro is? Or like, do you see anything else going on there?
Yeah, I mean, I think it has to do with both this sort of rediscovery of older music, in air quotes, and also the desire to tie music into sort of larger cultural events. But yeah, it was also, like Ion mentioned, it was sort of strangely serendipitous in some way that, you know, they decided to do this and all of a sudden the Backstreet Boys are coming to Iceland. And at the same time, I believe Fredrik Thor voiced one of the characters on the Sing. No, it was the Trolls movie, which had this whole boy band theme to it as well. So they really seem to have caught a kind of wave and wrote it very effectively.
I will say that personally, there's nothing that quite makes one feel age as when you see things that were current in your lifetime become recycled.
Yeah.
And pop music that was very much like the cutting edge and current within your lifetime be picked up again in the cycle.
Exactly. Yeah. And I believe even on Kanye's new album, he samples I Want It That Way, I think, on the new album. So yeah, it's very much of the moment. But also, yeah, like you mentioned, I'm a big fan of, there's this podcast about English football in England where one of the hosts is always making reference to the fact that like the players that are coming up now, like it used to be that they were born at a time when certain singles that he loved were on the radio, and now he's increasingly flustered by the idea that they were born at a time when he doesn't even remember the singles that were coming out because he had stopped tuning into popular music. So yeah, that makes one feel quite old, but also quite youthful at the same time, because I really, you know, the concert, the Christmas concert that they held, and this is no exaggeration, I don't remember quite such an atmosphere at an Icelandic concert before. I mean, it probably had something to do with it being Christmas and a lot of young people having sort of finished their final exams and being, you know, cutting loose. But yeah, it was, the noise was deafening and the reception was quite awesome to behold.
Yeah, I mean, this was kind of a fun piece for you to write, I imagine. Maybe you can kind of just, yeah, describe the vibe a little bit at the show. And I mean, from what I understand, you know, you were kind of a little bit backstage as well.
Yeah. So I got to trail them and follow them during their rehearsal at Salurin, which is a really quite fancy concert hall and, you know, not something that you would associate with someone rehearsing for some other gig. And then, yeah, I went to the concert. I actually managed to, because my wife was quite envious at the fact that I was going to the concert and she wasn't and the kids weren't. So I joined a private fan group on Facebook and managed to land three additional tickets for my family. So I went to soundcheck early in the morning and then the first family concert. And my feeling there was slightly underwhelming because I had sort of seen them rehearse the Ice Guys shows, the Ice Guys show.
Yeah.
But sort of, the first family performance was sort of cut into two sections. So they began by, you know, stepping on stage and performing songs from their private catalogs. And then, you know, they kind of, yeah, so it was like having seen the full choreographed routine, I thought, you know, was it wise to do this? Because, you know, the full show was so, you know, ambitious and spectacular in some sense that I had kind of reservations after that first family concert. I mean, the kids were obviously quite enthused. My younger one, less so. It was too much noise for him or something. But then, yeah, during sort of the final concert of the night in which, you know, when they pulled out all of the stops, so to speak, that was really, you know, you understood the concept. That's when they had a live band playing, sort of backing up all of the private individual performances, and you had cameos, and then of course you had like, you know, a sold out arena filled with, you know, very drunken young people who really picked up the atmosphere. And by the time they launched into the latter half of the show, yeah, it was really quite lovely. And I actually met a cousin of mine at the concert who convinced me to join him for a couple of beers. And I think that was really important. I think that's one of the interesting things about writing some of these pieces, because you struggle with like, okay, where do you want to stand as a journalist? Do you want to sort of step back from the crowd and soberly meditate on what's going on, taking notes? Or do you want to just really immerse yourself in the experience of what people are going through? And after this piece, I firmly come down on sort of the latter side of that, of that argument of like, yeah, there's something really valuable about being somewhere and, you know, really losing yourself in the experience and letting go of all reservations or any skepticism that you might have. Because, I mean, in the end, that's what you're trying to capture. You're trying to capture what it's like for someone who went to the concert and really, immerse themselves in that experience. So I was really happy that that's the approach that I went for, even though I had to cut down the actual experience by quite a number of words, because as some of the listeners may have noticed, it ran quite long, the piece.
Yes. Well, I think that's a great place to end. But thank you so much for chatting today, Ragnar. And really enjoyed the piece.
Thank you.
Deep North is the official podcast of Iceland Review, the oldest continuously running English language publication in Iceland, covering community, nature, and culture. If you enjoyed listening, please consider subscribing to Iceland Review at our website.